Hey everybody, Jay Schlansky here from the Fifth Trooper Network. I just want to take a moment to thank you for checking out this show. Did you know that over at thefifthtrooper.com we have tons of other content, including blogs, other podcasts, all kinds of stuff. In addition, if you want access to exclusive content, you can join us on patreon.com/thefifthtrooper and join at any level and you'll get access to exclusive blog articles, access to our private Discord, and much more. So please check us out and thank you so much for all your support.
Welcome to the Notorious Scoundrels, a Star Wars Legion podcast bringing you the latest news, general perspective, and competitive discussion.
Hello and welcome back to the Notorious Scoundrels podcast. I'm Kyle. I'm here with Mike.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Not much. It's Monday.
It is Monday. It's the Monday after May the 4th.
Yes. Yes. Unfortunately.
Today's Revenge of the 6th.
Revenge
right?
of the 6th, yeah. Unfortunately, I did not get to do any Star Wars related celebration things this weekend. We had some loose plans to go to the Nats baseball game because they do like a May 4th weekend thing on both the 4th and the 5th where, you know, they do like face painting and you get like special, you know, Star Wars themed national swag and stuff. But it was like rainy and gross all weekend.
So. It was rainy and gross all weekend. I was happy that I spent it inside. But I don't know. I don't know what the name of that park actually is, but it is.
It's called Nats Park.
That's what I thought. But
yeah, they sold the naming rights.
That and I was like, yeah. I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Yep. They have yet to sell the naming rights, even though they've been there now for quite some time. So, it just wasn't gonna, and with three kids, you know, like if it was just me and my wife, I'd be like, let's bring some umbrellas and stick it out. But, with the 2, 5, and 7 year old, we were like,
nope. We're good. Thanks.
That's a lot of work under the best of situations. So, yeah. But you went to a tournament. Yes. Up in Jersey.
I did. I went to, go hang out with Nick Bodner and all the guys up there, which was really fun. Great.
The illustrious Nick Bodner. Did he provide all the tables for this event?
So I think the short answer is yes. I think the long answer is I'm pretty sure that he has either sold or given the store some of his tables at some point. And so some of the tables are, I think, the stores, but they used to be
the stores, quote unquote. Yeah.
Yeah.
The stores via Nick Bodner.
I think he also probably brought some tables for this tournament, but I'm not sure about that whole thing, but I feel like I recall talking to him and he said that they, you know, he terrain has swapped hands or
point, you know. Okay. Anyway.
Regardless, Nick made the tables.
Yep. Right. Yeah. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. Yes. The czar of Legion terrain tables. So we will talk about that. But first we have kind of a slew of news items, actually. Some of this is a little bit backlogged because obviously we talked last week with Hank from Adepticon, which was great. We wanted to make sure we had all the information relevant for these topics. So we do now. So we will talk about them. So the first is world championships, our own takes on that. Obviously we talked to Hank last week, but we have some takes as well that we'll briefly share with you. The Las Vegas Open Invitational, which we have also not talked about yet, that was announced in the last 2 weeks or so. So we'll hit on that briefly. And then, so those are kind of like the tournament schedule related news items. There was in the business world, we don't usually talk about stuff in the business world, but this is potentially pretty relevant for,
I'd say,
not just Legion, but all of the games that most people listening to this podcast care about from in the minis gaming space. And that's the Embracer Group stuff. So we are going to talk about that. If you want a much more detailed discussion of this than what we're going to get into here, go check out our blog at thefifthtrooper.com/blog, where our own Evan Paul writes a very lengthy analysis of this, and he actually talked to some industry experts and got like quotes and stuff from them as part of writing this article. So if you want a much more in depth
and probably much more correct.
Yes. Right. If you want a more correct, more in depth, more factual discussion of this topic, please check out our website. But why don't we open with that, since we're already talking about it? So the short version is Embracer Group, which is or was the parent company of Asmodee, previously acquired Asmodee just 2 years ago, I think, actually, right?
Yeah, I think it was roughly around the time that FFG and AMG like kind of swapped. So it was kind of everything.
It was after that.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought the FFG AMG swap was a result of the Embracer buyout.
I've got that backwards. Yeah. So the FFG AMG thing preceded that, when there was a lot of speculation that they were trying to put Asmodee up for sale.
Mm.
And then they did put Asmodee up for sale, and then Embracer bought it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. So, and then Embracer was, I guess, attempting to do some kind of deal where they would get a bunch of financing, and they did. That deal fell through, so they were kind of left holding the bag of it. They financed some of a significant portion of the Asmodee acquisition with debt, which is like not uncommon in the business world. This is how things work. But their way to finance that debt basically fell through. So,
nice. I'm sure there were a lot of people happy about that.
Yeah, they Embracer Group also owns a lot of video game studios. When that fall through happened, they actually had to close like a lot of video game studios. I guess they closed 7 studios and canceled a bunch of games, all of these video games. And then they executed this split, basically, where they split into 3 separate companies. The names for this one is a little strange to me, but Coffee Stain and Friends. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, that's a bunch of small/medium-sized video game studios. They make stuff like Deep Rock Galactic and Valheim, which are,
I mean those are good games. I've been playing the crap out of Valheim, I'm gonna be honest.
I have not played it, but I've heard good things.
Yeah.
Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, again, I don't really get the and Friends, but this is essentially all the Lord of the Rings related stuff, including some media content and some high-tier video game studios, as well as Dark Horse comics.
I'm like sort of curious about this, because all of the like mainline Lord of the Rings stuff that I'm aware of is like New Line Cinema and Amazon Games Workshop. Like,
yeah,
like what do these guys actually have to be able to call their studio Middle Earth whatever?
I don't know. That is an excellent question.
Okay. All right.
That's probably a topic for another podcast.
Sure, sure. I found that kind of weird and interesting, but
I mean, they could have some, you know, just because Amazon produces Rings of Power, they could have some kind of interest in, I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, so that's what that is. And then the third one is Asmodee. So, and what they did, because, Asmodee, of these three groups that they split, Asmodee is the most profitable. So they also gave Asmodee all the debt that they had, which is about, lot. Yeah, it's in euros, but it equates to about $938 million. I'm not a like Wall Street financial analyst. I do have an accounting background, so I'm going to speak to this with like not nearly as much authority as someone that actually does like investment making or this sort of thing, because this is not what I do. But basically, that amount of debt equates to it's like almost 4 times. It's like 3.9 times their EBITDA, which I'm sure you've seen that acronym. But what that basically means is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So It's like the debt as a multiple of their yearly earnings.
How long they would take to pay it off, right?
Basically. If all of their earnings were applied to the debt.
Yeah. Sure. Like if they never like invested in making the company better or doing anything like that.
Right. Yeah. Then it would take them about 4 years. Yeah. So that's definitely like higher. Then you want to see it.
Not great.
You know, I think like somewhere around 3 is the number that I've seen bandied about as like a something that's more like an acceptable average normalish number. 3.9 obviously is higher than that. Again, I'm not a financial analyst, but my understanding based on what I've been following in this situation is that, you know, as long as they remain profitable, their lenders, which includes like JP Morgan Chase. So these are not, you know, random loan sharks, right? These are like big financial institutions that make good decisions generally. As long as Asmodee remains profitable. Yeah. Okay. Right. These are success. Their lenders are successful financial institutions. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
I don't want to always claim they make good decisions, but
yeah.
They at least make informed decisions. Let's put it that way.
They make decisions that are in their best interest.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
Which in this case, as long as Asmodee remains profitable, it is in their best interest to keep the loan alive. Right.
Yeah. And refinance it basically.
Yeah.
Because they will always earn more money in the long run if the company that they have loaned money to is viable enough to pay them interest. You know, if they wanted to like call the debt and be like, sorry, Asmodee, you got to pay all this to us 18 months from now, which is currently when it becomes due, then that would probably cause Asmodee to fold. And, you know, a loan is, you know, that's a revenue stream. That's a future revenue stream for JP Morgan and, you know, these other Swiss banks and stuff that are, JP Morgan's not a Swiss bank, but the other lenders are Swiss banks. You know, that's a revenue stream for them that they're essentially cutting off. So as long as Asmodee keeps making money, which it has been and seems like it will continue to do, they'll be able to keep refinancing this debt and pay it down slowly. So I don't know. That's a long background, but that's also a long way of saying I'm not super worried.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, right, like let's say worst case scenario and the banks go nuclear on Asmodee and they're like, you got to pay it off. Asmodee is going to start selling off their assets to pay the debt. And that's going to include selling our games and game companies that make the games, like their studios, to other places, right? So it's not like our stuff would disappear probably in that situation anyways. I think.
Yeah, I mean, in the business world, success usually gets purchased.
Right, exactly.
Atomic Mass Games and Fantasy Flight Games, especially now with Star Wars Unlimited being a thing, are both successful studios. So if, you know, doomsday scenario, the lenders called in the debt or Asmodee started really getting buried by it or whatever, and they sold stuff off, Atomic Mass Games and Fantasy Flight Games would be like at the top of the list of things that somebody else would want to buy. Yep. And continue, you know, cashing in basically. So, you know, for us as the consumers of these things, it, you know,
I mean, it's already happened once.
Yeah,
in the last 3 years, right? Like, I mean, frankly, I mean, is it in the last 3 years? Within Legion's lifetime,
right?
This has already happened.
Yeah, and frankly, like, that was when it got moved to a completely different studio, right? Which I think is probably even more significant than what would happen in this case, which is that same studio just having different, like, corporate ownership above them.
Yep. I think the biggest thing I suspect would be AMG's access to production lines, I would have to guess, because I think most of that runs through Asmodee.
Certainly the distribution does.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea how they're, you know, what the front end of their supply chain looks like with actually like making the plastic and stuff, but the distribution at least is very central to like what Asmodee does.
Yeah.
So yeah, that could be an issue at some point, but that distribution chain is also very profitable. So
yeah,
I'm not worried yet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's you know, at the end of the day, it's pretty hard to kill Star Wars. We've had some really really bad Star Wars products made in the last 5 years or so, and it hasn't killed it yet. So I'm sure it'll be okay.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. So you know, if and when these games stop making money, then that could change, but they've gone through a lot of adversity up to this point and they've continued making money. So yeah, as long as people want to buy Star Wars plastic, which all indications are they still do, and cardboard,
yeah,
you know, if we're talking about unlimited, then, you know, it's going to be fine. So, all right. So that was that. Should we talk about Worlds real quick?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's actually, I think, two things here. The first is just Milwaukee, the Milwaukee move.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a little bit sad about this because I have family in the Chicago area, and this makes it like a little bit harder to turn it into a family trip. I was also briefly sad because one of the things that I really enjoy about going back to Chicago for Adepticon is the food. I love Chicago style pizza. I love Chicago style hot dogs. But Hank informed me, and I wish that he had said this while we were recording, because this is like a significant selling point for me. Milwaukee actually has Portillo's and Chicago style pizza places. So I don't know. I guess that's not a thing to worry about anymore, yeah, at least for me.
I mean, Portillo's was fine, but
all right.
Whatever. I don't know. It was fine.
Get out of here with your bad takes.
The pizza was great. I'll get the pizza every time, but the hot dogs. It was a hot dog.
It is a hot dog. It is a very delicious hot dog. Anyway, I certainly was left with a very positive impression of the space. I mean, it's going to be a lot of space. It sounds like a much better spot to just have a convention, like once you're there.
Yeah. I mean, I think the things that I'm going to be disappointed about this are all, I think, nostalgia based.
Yes.
Just from like, I don't know. Adepticon was like the first big place that a lot of us, when I say us, like just like a lot of the community, like met each other, and we see each other there every year, and we're in the same 2,000 square feet or, you know, whatever it is. And so that'll be sad, but I mean, this sounds like a good opportunity for them. And I think at the end of the day, like Adepticon growing, and I think by extension, the footprint of Star Wars Legion at Adepticon growing is not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, he basically said that they're going to end up allocating double the space that they did last year. So, yeah, that seems like a net positive, even if it's a little bit harder to travel to.
Yeah, I definitely think, I don't know anything about Milwaukee, really, other than it's a place that exists.
it is not a big airport, because, frankly, it is so close to O'Hare. You know, Milwaukee's only like a little over an hour north of Chicago.
It sort of feels like a DC Baltimore vibe kind of thing going on.
Yeah, except I would say it's actually easier to get from Milwaukee to Chicago or vice versa than it is to get from Baltimore to DC.
Interesting. Okay.
Simply because of traffic. Not that Chicago doesn't have like any traffic, because it does, but it tends to be more concentrated toward the city. And those that are familiar with Chicago, O'Hare is kind of like not actually in the city.
Yeah.
It's like northwest of the city, and there are highways that you can take north south that are also west of the city. So you don't really have to actually like go into Chicago or near Chicago to travel up to Milwaukee from there.
Yeah, it sort of seems reasonable that you could still fly into O'Hare and then like Uber to the convention if you wanted to.
Yeah,
it's probably going to be like inexpensive Uber.
I would share that if you're going to do an Uber, but yeah.
It's going to be like $80 or something.
Yeah, you could do a Turo too, or, you know, rent a car or take a train. They have buses and stuff. So there's like options. You can also just fly into Milwaukee Airport, which is, usually that's going to like connect through O'Hare, but that's an option too. There are options. It's not quite as like, I mean, O'Hare is one of the easiest places to get to in the world, really.
Yeah.
And certainly in the United States. So anything from traveling to O'Hare to traveling to almost literally anywhere else is going to be like a step down in terms of ease of travel. But it is what it is. So, okay, you want to talk about the actual fact that Worlds is going to be at Adepticon still?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is awesome, right? Other than it's awesome, other than I don't really have much other to say. I feel like we don't have a ton of details right now, I
It's
guess.
yeah, which is fair. We're almost a year out from the tournament, so expecting any sort of details about format, etc. I think we can certainly infer some things. If they're doubling the size of the space available, I think it's reasonable to expect them to try and push this to 512, 512 players, especially since it's open.
It seems like that's pretty likely. I think the main takeaways here are it's not an invitational,
Right.
which is kind of a take it or leave it depending on where your stance is. And the fact that it can just host way more people, it sounds like, which I think is a really, really good thing because just growing the tournament, I think, is the move. So,
Yeah, I mean, last year we had what? I say last year, it was like 2 months ago, but last time, we had what, 270 something,
ish.
which was the largest Legion tournament held ever to that point. And it seems like they're obviously trying to just increase that number even more, which I think is great. The it being an open versus invite, I think that's kind of like for the tournament itself. I'm not sure that makes a huge difference in terms of attendance, other than possibly making it more. You could make arguments about the quality of competition at the, in the first few rounds or whatever, but last year they gave out, I've heard numbers anywhere from like 400 to 700 invites. And they got 270. So I don't know that like if they're going to just be handing out that many invites anyway. If we were talking about like a first year Legion situation where you can only get them at conventions and there was 32 basically, then okay, yeah, that's going to affect how many people are able to go. But when you've got a situation where you've got potentially up to like 700 invites already being issued and 270 people show up, I don't know how much just removing the invite part actually changes in the final numbers.
I don't think I think the only thing that the invite thing really changes as far as numbers go is I do think it the invites that had flights attached to them and
Yes.
for people that are very far away, I do think is a consideration as far as the nomenclature of calling this Worlds. Just
I definitely agree with that.
Because it's hard
And it's
and
harder. It's harder
expensive.
for, yeah.
It's harder and expensive to get to
Yep.
Chicago from places like Australia
Yeah,
or
that's entirely fair.
which I mean, I don't know. I think the concessions that AIM concessions like the things that AMG has done to like kind of change that up, I think we should just see how it plays out, I think I've heard it batted around that like worlds should like rotate between countries and I mean like we're in the US, so I'm like,
This
yeah, please don't.
well, we're in the US and the studio that makes the game is in the US.
Yeah.
So
And I think the fact that
don't get me wrong, I love an excuse to go to Europe for this.
yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I think the fact that like AMG can line up they're like panels and stuff with worlds is a big deal. in my in my head. And I think that the fact that all of those things happening on the same weekend for all the different game lines, you know, this is the first time. What I think is interesting, and maybe a takeaway that I think isn't being talked about a ton, is that I think my general kind of analysis of everything we've seen going on since AMG took over is that they're a little bit less interested in the competitive stuff than FFG was. However, there's going to be Worlds for MCP for the first time ever this year too.
And Shatterpoint, right?
And Shatterpoint, which is an interesting, I don't want to say reversal, but just an interesting direction for that head, considering what we've seen up until this point.
Yeah. And I think that's cool that they're doing that. I will say, if there's one like thing that I had to pick as a most significant casualty of dropping the invite system, is how it potentially juices local participation.
That's definitely my, yeah. We definitely have a hard time getting people to turn out for events that do not have invites attached to them traditionally.
Yeah, and that's been, you know, lots of people have been reporting that as a thing, right? It gives you something to, it ties all the local stuff to part of something larger, right? Which people like to feel part of.
Totally.
You know, not that like swag isn't something to play for, but it gives you something more to play for than swag.
So this is what I'll say. I think if the swag was better, I think it would encourage people to come out to the locals more.
Okay. More than just like alt arts and stuff like that.
Well, I mean,
because the alt arts I've seen are pretty cool from the new
tournament. They are cool, but this is kind of jumping the gun. I'm going to talk a little bit about the tournament I went to this weekend in this because it relates. Yep. For instance, we played with the 2024 tournament kit over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
Nick ran the tournament. It was great. They just got the kit and he was like, screw it, let's do it. We're using it. The top prizes were very neato. I got a flashy foil Delta Squad full art unit card.
Yep.
I got a flashy foil Ahsoka. I won it, so I also got like a big print of like the Delta Squad Ahsoka thing with my name on it, which was also great.
Uh-huh.
There was also Range Trooper and Clone Commando unit cards in there that were full art, that everybody got one of each. The rest of the box pretty much was all stuff that was available at Adepticon for the most part. And that I think will be available via the AMG prize pool.
Which they've already sort of, I don't know, have they officially confirmed that prize wall is going to be basically like making the tour around?
It's sort of unclear. I'm kind of assuming like it's going to show up at like Gen Con.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to show up at Adepticon next year. I think there's one big one in Europe. I don't know which one that would, there's a big one in Europe.
UKGT?
It's like Gamescom or something. Anyways, I'm pretty sure it's probably just going to make the rounds of those. I don't expect it to be at like Nova or LVO or, you know, any of that. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, I think if there was a little bit more fire put into these tournament kits with the swag that you get out of them, and it was not maybe stuff that we've already gotten, like if you go to like Adepticon, you've already got like 70% of what's in the tournament kit. If you spent your money on like cards, not money, your price tickets or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. You know, where's the dice? Where's the
measuring tools?
The measuring tools, which were maybe not for Legion, but for like every other game line at Adepticon. Like, you know, I think if they were doing stuff like that, I think that would be a great alternative to juicing the locals in contrast to what they've been doing. Anyways.
Yeah, let me piggyback on that real quick. Because I have a very specific swag feedback point. And it's that I know that the alt arts are probably like the cheapest to make. And they are cool. But to me, anyway, they're also like the least attractive swag. Because so often I don't even take out my cards. Maybe I would if I had like a... I probably can do like most alt arts at this point. But like you don't... You know, for like once you have most of the stats and stuff memorized, which happens pretty quickly if you play enough, like there's no reason to actually use the cards for anything.
The only thing the cards are good for is the exhaustible ones.
Right. Yeah.
So give us alt arts of those, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. More exhaustible alt arts, right? Because that's what's most likely going to be on the table. But the point is, like, me personally, I like swag that I'm also using.
Yep.
So dice, tools. We've never seen any kind of swag that is, you know, like measuring sticks or movement tools or whatever.
I think it's tough for Legion just because they're not one piece.
Sure.
Just yeah. In contrast to the other game lines for the most part, like,
or one piece.
Range rulers or one stick. Or, yeah. You know,
I get that the tools for Legion are like slightly more complex. Yeah. But I'd still love to see something, you know, even just like the pre-painted of the existing tools or whatever.
Yeah,
anyway
yeah
dice, tools, and tokens, like the order tokens. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all things that you use constantly throughout the game, and you know, this is why people love the poker chip order tokens, is because you're constantly using them. They have a great feel to them and they look awesome. And if there was like, I mean, they've done some swag in the past that's like acrylic tokens for order tokens, but they chip really easily. Like, it's not the best material. They've had some that are cardboard.
Yeah, they traditionally, the stuff they were made out of were left something to be desired. But I mean, I don't know. Like, at the end of the day, the kits will probably get way more expensive if they do something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I get the cards are significantly cheaper to produce than all of those other things. But as a, you know, Legion tournament player or whatever, as a Legion player, just generally, the stuff that I personally find the most value in is the stuff that I'm constantly like putting my hands on and using. And that's not cards, unfortunately. So, yeah, is what it is. So yeah, we'll see if this affects local tournament enthusiasm and turnout. I guess we do now have the LVO Invitational, which maybe we can transition to that. That's essentially a separate tournament from, they're going to have like a normal open at LVO, it sounds like, too. They haven't, the details on the distinction between these two have not been super clear to me, at least based on what I've seen. But the short version is a local tournament can register with Frontline Gaming to have its tournament, like, quote unquote, count for the LVO Invitational. And if you win it, you can get an invite. And then if you don't, you can still like accumulate points to get some kind of common pool of invites that are available to people that get a certain number of points. I don't know exactly how that works, but bottom line is you can play like locals to get an invite to Vegas. Yeah. I mean, seems cool. You know, personally, like, I didn't go to Vegas last year, or this year rather, because it was just too much at that time of year for me. For me personally, it's one of the more expensive places to travel to.
This conversation.
I know we've had this conversation. Yeah, I know this is not everybody's experience, but for whatever reason, maybe I'm just terrible at planning trips to Vegas.
We just need to get you like, a flight that is actually reasonably costed.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I just wait too long. It's always a last minute thing for me. Anyway, every time I've gone to Vegas, I've ended up spending a lot of money. But it, you know, it's also like it's a fun tournament. So, personally, I'm going to try and go to that as well as Adepticon. You know, more more high profile tournaments is a positive in my opinion. So, you know, it's a few months off from Adepticon, so it's like reasonable to potentially go to both from a scheduling perspective. So, yeah, I don't know how I feel about them, like, you know, announcing that when they did.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of.
I wish
I'm
that they had waited.
Quiet at the moment. I wish they would have. Like, I don't know. It was sort of like the what everyone thought was the corpse of Worlds wasn't in the ground yet, and obviously it never made it to the ground because it wasn't dead.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And I'm still kind of unfortunately, I think it, in my headspace, I'm still a little bit like, man, I feel like we jumped the gun here, guys. you know, but it is what it is. More Legion is a good thing. I'm not trying to poo-poo it, but I am a little butthurt about it in the short term, I think.
Yeah, which I totally understand, right? Like, it, especially in light of the Worlds announcement, it just felt kind of premature.
Yeah.
You know, I know that they're not claiming that it's Worlds, and they never did, even from, you know, right after the initial announcement where it seemed like there was no Worlds. But based on like the timing and everything, it seems like they meant it to be a replacement.
Yeah, I mean, it would be awfully coincidental.
Yes.
If it wasn't that. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, competition in, you know, conventions is also not a bad thing from hey, like, let's make everybody better because we're watching each other do things and, you know, whatever. And the other good news is that LVO and Adepticon are farther apart this year. So
yeah, they actually moved LVO closer to the beginning of January, which is immensely helpful for potentially being able to go to both. So
yeah.
Which is great. And that's what I plan on trying to do. You know, there's like, I probably get leeway for like three convention tournaments a year with my personal life. And, you know, there have been years when that's been Adepticon, LVO, and Nova. You know, last year that was PAX, Adepticon, and Nova. And, you know, we'll see.
It'll be four this year. It's going to be Nova, PAX, LVO, and Adepticon.
we'll see. There have been years when I've managed
experience last year. We'll see.
There, yeah. I had a great time.
PAX itself is awesome. Just to be clear, yes. that wasn't a jab at you, Nick.
It was no. It was a Philly experience.
Yeah.
I think we learned our lesson there, though.
Yeah, I will not be going out after 10 p.m. after anywhere in Philly from now on.
Nope. We're going back to the hotel and getting room service.
Yep.
DoorDash, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. But that, yeah, the tournament was great.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see if my wife has patience for that. Especially if I can't turn Adepticon into a family trip. That makes, you know.
Sure. That makes it a little harder. Yeah.
Because Nova's in my backyard. That's a family trip. Those were like two easy ones.
Yep.
But now it's only one easy one. So we'll see. All right. Should we talk about we got some rules changes?
We did get some rules changes.
Updates, changes, whatever you want to call them. There's blue text. So
yes, that one.
I think the two biggest ones here are the Delta Commando interaction. Which they basically made it work like how people thought it should, where the dot only applies to unique cards. In other words, if you take Delta Squad, you can still take Commandos because they don't have a dot.
And if you take Hunter in Bad Batch, you can also take copies of the Hunter, the training upgrade.
Yes. Thank goodness, because yeah. That would have been weird.
Would have been weird. Probably wouldn't have mattered, I suspect, but
not for Republic. Like, Republic doesn't really take Hunter on anything. I guess Rebels don't really either,
but yeah, that's the thing. I mean, maybe like there's like a weird situation where you're like putting Hunter on like Cody or
I guess
Cassian, yeah, or something. I, you know, whatever. regardless.
Yeah.
That is
not relevant because they fixed it.
Yes, not relevant because they fixed it.
And then the deployment timing with commandos?
Yeah, they also changed. So they, I would say, clarified the deployment timing. Before, it basically said the complete the mission token was put on the table during deployment, which was
that's a long
awfully
window.
Awfully vague and a large window of time. The timing now is much more precise when you put your clone commando, when you deploy your clone commandos, each unit of clone commandos, you will deploy a complete the mission token alongside them at that time. So if you decide to deploy your clone commandos early on, you will have less information than if you wait towards the end and deploy your clone commandos last. You know, I think from a how this is going to play out perspective, I don't think it changes much compared to when it was a vague idea of what it was doing. Just because clone commandos have infiltrate, you're waiting to drop them until last anyways, for the most part.
Yep.
And traditionally, Republic deployment is not really rocket science.
yeah.
You know, so as far as where things are going to go.
Yeah, it mostly matters for those two tokens that are going to be kind of like, this is where I expect my opponent to go tokens.
Yes.
And that's going to be pretty obvious even before anybody drops any units, unless you're on like a super weird deployment. Like Disarray, I mean, think about it this way. How many times do you play Minefield where the minefield mines end up not mattering? Pretty rarely, right?
And you get to place those before they drop anything.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So you're going to have much more information here. You know, if you wait to deploy your last two commandos, you're going to have four or five or six deployments worth of units that they've dropped already. You know, and unlike minefield tokens, these don't go away.
Right.
Yeah, they can't clear them to get rid of them. I think this is a like from a balance perspective, it probably doesn't make that much of a difference, but it definitely gives you like a defined period of time when you're supposed to put it on the table, which is important for playability reasons. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's yeah.
Good clarification.
Yes. Okay. There were also some other random things, like they put Omega's keyword in there, which we already knew what it did. I'm part of squad two. Then there were some other random things like wound allocation. The line of sight restriction now only applies to ranged attacks.
Yes.
Previously.
Which is good.
It is good. Yes, that is a positive change. Once people figured out that it technically didn't say ranged and that it was relevant on melee attacks. That was briefly a weird interaction that you could do.
Hard to set up, but yeah.
Easier with force push.
Way easier with
force push. It's really only you could do it with force push, or like if the defender wanted to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so doesn't matter anymore. all right. Do you want to talk about your tournament and your takeaways?
Yeah, so we went up to Philly this weekend, the Nova crew. I really should say it's really not the Nova crew at this point. It's like the College Park DC crew.
Yeah, it's yeah. Just definitely not the Nova crew, unfortunately for me.
Yeah. So yeah, we went up to, I guess it's technically Jersey, not Philly. I shouldn't say Philly. Top Deck is in Jersey. And we went to the tournament there. It was pretty great. I think we had 16 players. And we were playing with clone commandos and range troopers being legal, which was cool because we had the unit cards for them because they were in the kit.
Awesome.
So everybody was playing with proxies, obviously, because the releases had been delayed, which I don't think we've really talked about.
We have not.
But I believe they were delayed like 2 weeks or so because they were supposed to be out this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Suffice to say, Obi-Wan Kenobi, my man, won the tournament without the help of clone commandos. I am continuing down the degeneracy lane of, you know, using clone balls and Padme and doing the thing. And I am working with Kenobi and a bunch of medics nowadays. So I also played Pikes for the first time in a long time. So I think the things that are relevant to take away here are probably just like talking about clone commandos and range troopers in general. So I think the thing that a lot of people have been talking about as far as clone commandos goes is like, oh man, they're range 4, critical 2, they've got lethal, they're like very long range, they do damage. Their offensive pool is sort of whatever, frankly. That's really not what makes this unit crazy. And they're crazy. I just want to like, they're crazy good.
And this comes from, even though you didn't play them at Top Deck, you've played them a ton in local games and stuff.
Yeah, we played like 10 or so games with them. And I think collectively between like our little group, like we've probably played like 20 games with them. Between us, like with and against them,
yep,
whether it was at the tournament or, you know, just like on tables or whatever. And they're just impossible to kill. They are impossible to kill. And obviously they're not impossible to kill, but the amount of resources that you have to dedicate to killing a 75 point unit is insane. As opposed to what you should have to devote to it, and perhaps more importantly, to kill a 75 point unit that doesn't require any support. I think, like,
if you give them like HQ uplink or something like that.
Well, even without HQ uplink, it's really not that big a deal to, like, they're still defensively very capable.
Defensively, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And that's sort of what I'm getting at, is that the way that the clone commandos kind of play out on the table is that they generally are forward infiltrated. And this is a unit that I actually think you can infiltrate aggressively, after seeing them played on the table a lot. Infiltrated aggressively and in places that, like, if you put a squad of Pathfinders down, they would be dead immediately. The infiltrate rules are a little bit out the window here. Infiltrate as close to the center box on recover as possible. Go for it. Do it like 100% of the time, unless they've got like Vader or something.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but if they don't have force push, get in there. And the thing is, like, your opponents are like, okay, there's this 75 point unit or two 75 point units on the center box or on the center intercept or whatever. I have to deal with these. They are scoring units. They're going to do the thing that is going to win the game. They might not kill me, but I have to kill them. And at the end of the day, you have to generally like give up almost an entire turn's worth of shooting to maybe kill a unit.
And this is because of the combination of the shield and the Katarn armor.
Yeah, it's just like the first, if you, they're obviously surging to block, which I think we all can appreciate that is generally pretty good.
Yeah.
But anytime you lose more than one model, you just pop Katarn and it didn't count, essentially, right? And most of the time, they're going to, like, you know, you put four pass cover or whatever, and they roll their defense dice, and they don't need to pop Katarn because the average is they only lose one.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, in order for them to even generally have to pop Katarn, you have to put like five or six pass cover. And if you get unlucky, you've got a mulligan. And it's just like Legion is in one of those places where your big shots really need to matter. And if you're putting your big, and the other thing is that you're now unloading your big shots into their not big units.
Right. Because it's effectively like a super strike team.
It's a super strike team that you have to kill. Like you have to kill it because otherwise it's going to run away with the objective. So your, you know, two or three commandos are just like sitting up front doing their 75 point shenanigans, whether that's, you know, shooting the enemy unit and killing like a model or two, or grabbing the objective and running away, and then your other 600 points of army is just coming up and slinging, you know, Z6 fire supports at whatever is shooting your commandos, right? And it's tough to deal with. They're very good. And I think the defensiveness of them has been my big takeaway, that they are the objective unit that I always wanted in Rebels.
They're what Pathfinders should have been, yeah, from that perspective.
I think so. Yeah. And they also, like, once they get to, if you kind of like get close to try and deal with them, their range 2 pool is also very, very good.
So is their melee pool, frankly.
Yo, I engaged a clone commando unit with Vader, and it only had 2 models left, but it still rolled 4 dice and killed him. So, because also he apparently doesn't deflect in melee. So that's the thing. I'm so used to that playing Republic these days. I'm like, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No deflect keyword in Republic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's what 2 black for their vibro blades or whatever, which is,
yeah.
I mean, that's a Wookiee unit,
and it's often 2 black surging to crit, basically.
Right.
like it's pretty good. And if all 4 of them are alive, like, it's a lot better than a Wookiee unit. So, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things where I feel like you're a little damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, you kind of don't want to shoot them because, frankly, it never feels good to shoot them, because you're only ever going to kill one model, with regardless of what you shoot at them with. But if you don't, like, they're going to win the game. So, anywho. That's my spiel on clone commandos, I think, at this point. Range troopers, I'm a little bit more lukewarm on, to be honest. I think range troopers are very good, but I don't think they really solve what I would consider to be like the Imperial gunline-y list building issue we've had over the past, you know, couple of years. I think you can make a very good range 4 gunline with them, but that's really all it does. Their suppression is probably a bigger deal than the lethality, at least into clones.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I mean, Imperial units have always been pretty good at killing like droids and rebels and stuff.
Yeah.
So, but in the clone matchups, it feels pretty similar outside of they're just dumping a ton of suppression into you the whole time. They're not really killing you any faster, I don't think. In fact, I would go as far as to say that if you're looking for units that are going to kill things better, I still think shorters with T21s are probably the route I personally would take.
It sounds like you're missing the surge on the range troopers. Or the surge conversion.
Yes. Yeah. Like, the critical is a big deal on the shorts. You're rolling enough dice that you always need it, which means that if you're running range troopers, I really think you need aggressive tactics. But if you're running aggressive tactics, that means you're also, your characters are not like doing things that Empire characters traditionally want to be doing these days.
You're not running bounty hunters or something.
Right.
You're running like Veers or Krennic with a bunch of dudes, and is that actually good?
Right. And like, could you put aggressive tactics on like Vader? You could, but he doesn't really give out that many orders. So like, you know, I think there's probably room for people to play around with like a Palpatine list, but
he doesn't really give out, other than like most of the, he's got several turns where the only order that he's giving out besides the entourage order is the one to himself.
I've seen people messing around with force guidance. I'm not saying I love it. It's a thing that people are trying. All of that is to say that I think all around consensus seems to be that you really want to be surging on these short troopers, and people are going to that sort of length to get the surge tokens on the unit.
And maybe at that point, it's just a little bit too much work to get the surge tokens on them, and you're making too many sacrifices in the rest of your lists structurally.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely, look, it feels really stupid to be able to spur yourself and get cover. I will say, after doing it several times, you know, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that you have to take the unit in multiples, I think is another thing that is worth mentioning, that I think definitely at first glance, it's like, oh, always take three of these. I definitely could see just taking one. A suppressive unit at range four, that's like, how much are these things? Like 80 something points?
It's either 85 or 88, depending on which heavy you take. And then obviously if you take the extra dude, that increases it by another 15.
Like, they've got armor one. The armor one has mattered a lot less than I mean, obviously, like, it strips a hit most of the time, but it doesn't feel like it really makes them that much more tanky, just because the dice pools these days are so big.
And if they're not, then they're just relying on critical or something else that's going to bypass it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So it's sort of, I don't know, it kind of feels like they have low profile, basically. Which is good, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't feel super special as far as how they operate on the table. But yeah, we've definitely been toying around with like a triple range trooper plus death trooper sort of situation, and you can definitely build a really scary range four Imperial gun line that will make the people that play around you only locally never want to play against you again, but it is a thing you can do.
So you think if there is a path for success for them, it's just getting, it's kind of going all in on that suppressive range four angle.
It's a lot of suppression. It is. If you don't have a way to mitigate suppression in your list, it's actually a problem. You know, I these days I've been running Padme, so you always have the kind of like escape hatch, but I do think that Sam has been running them with Krennic, and he always drops Total Annihilation or whatever it is on turn five.
Annihilation looms, yeah.
Yeah, that one. And there's already a ton of suppression down on the table. I think last game I had like four or five suppression on like every unit. Just like
yep.
So because he was taking like, I think it was three range troopers, a shore trooper, a mortar, death troopers. I think there was a stormtrooper in there with an RTC too. So just was a lot of range four junk.
And did he have IRG?
He did. There was an IRG unit with protector, which I guess as long as we're talking about that, is I think if you're gonna take these guys, it's kind of mandatory. I let me back that train up. I think if you're playing any sort of Empire gun line right now and you don't have IRG with protector in it, you should find a way to delete something in your list and put it in there, because otherwise your stuff will die and theirs will not. So yeah, but I do think it is similarly important in these lists to have the IRG, and that also like that does make the armor keyword better on them, obviously.
Right, because if crits are coming through, then you're just pulling them off.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Likewise, probably want a medic or two.
Yep,
for sure. So, yeah, they've been good. But I don't think the range troopers are going to be the scary bad guy in the room that everybody thought they were going to be, at least at first glance.
I could see if Empire gets some more tools, because, you know, as a unit themselves, they look pretty darn cost effective.
Yes. But
Empire as a faction, I think, is just struggling a little bit right now to find, like, what to, you know, they have a lot of individual units that are good, but how to actually like put it all together in a way that can deal with some of these hyper efficient, you know, like experimental droids and the clone gun lines. It's still a bit of a struggle for them. And yeah, it doesn't seem like range troopers change that calculus significantly, even though individually they're obviously a very good unit.
So. Yeah. And I think Empire has just been kind of suffering from the fact that there's a lot of long range Pierce in the meta, and
yeah,
that's not going away anytime soon. So
they're the red saves without defensive tech faction.
yeah, right. And like the thing is, like, we're probably going to see a lot less arcs, but that's only because we're going to see a ton more commandos. And sorry, Empire, but commandos are just as good at piercing red saves arcs are, if not better. I don't think range troopers solved that problem, so I guess we'll see. But I think that there could be some sort of interesting like vehicle brew potentially with them, as far as like maybe like a one of ATST or something backed up by range troopers that just like really lays on the suppression with what's his face? Is it Weiss that allows you to shoot all the guns at the same time?
Yep.
Yeah. But we'll have to see.
Yeah. All right. Well, any further takeaways, thoughts?
Kenobi's pretty busted, but I think we've talked about that a couple times.
Yeah, we have. Point. Yeah.
The list, this is what I will say. It continues to amaze me how every time we kind of think we know everything about the game, like something small changes, and it kind of like opens up a new avenue. You know, I think if you talk to either one of us 6 months ago, we would be like, yeah, don't ever take Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? Certainly me, at least. And his lightsaber sucks. Let me just say that out loud a few times.
Yeah, it's not
the
good.
Amount of times I've rolled like two, I've said, yeah, that's two Pierce two on his attack roll is frighteningly high. But he's, and I think the thing that made him better was the fact that the medics are so cheap now. The fact that you can saturate your list with medics really turns his ability on. And it's one of those things where like a small points adjustment that was somewhat calculated, I assume, really changed something else that wasn't, that was related to it, but obviously like wasn't on that card, right? Yeah. So
I mean, Legion is a game where, because of foundationally how it's designed, like small changes have a big impact, which I think is a good thing for the record.
I'm certainly supporting that argument,
but yeah, I think I mean, the medics went down by what, like 4 points?
Yeah, which was I think actually like a pretty radical change in cost for an upgrade. I think it was a good change. I think they're costed like pretty fairly for what they do. But they do allow Kenobi to do his thing in a way that he was never able to do before.
Before it was always a little bit of a gamble, right?
Yes.
It's like, do I want to risk taking these wounds on Kenobi, or do I want to just like, you know, pull off the dodge to strip the hit and then still roll the save on the original unit? Like it was like a whose wounds are more valuable kind of thing. And now it's like, oh, why not? Let's just roll saves on Kenobi and see what happens.
Right.
So you can really like funnel all the offense of your opponent's army into your Pierce Immune Kenobi, and just see what happens. And
maybe you're like, okay, you take a couple wounds, you're like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah.
Right. But if you don't take a couple wounds, you're just printing cash money.
Yeah.
And oftentimes you're dealing damage back to them, which it was My round one opponent at top deck, like it was like turn two. He took the first shot of the game, and I had kind of like stuck like a pike unit out there. I'm like, go get him, boys. And he decided to move to range three with a BX unit because he was like, I'm gonna do some damage. And in fairness to him, he rolled like eight hits. But the only thing in my army that rolled defense dice was Kenobi. And I killed one of his dudes. So the first attack of the game was from him, but the first damage of the game on that attack was also to him.
Yeah, and of course, immune deflect for them
Doesn't count
doesn't
because
work when they're shooting not Kenobi,
yes.
because of how Saracer works. It would
Yeah.
work if they shot Kenobi, but not if
Yes,
they're shooting somebody
yes.
else that
It just
Kenobi's protecting.
it felt really dirty.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's the train I'm on at the moment, and I think I'm gonna keep on. I haven't actually played EXD with it yet. That's something that I would like to get on the table sometime soon, but
Yeah, that's
we'll
the
see.
matchup I would be most concerned about, I think. Because they can just kind of power through the defensive deck.
Maybe, yeah. I'm not convinced that's the case yet. I think it's more of like a. It might bring that like what was it a 90% win rate or something stupid to like 65,
Which is
you
still
know,
bad.
which is still bad, but
Yeah.
it's like it's we're starting to talk about the range where you can kind of use skill to get back in the
Yeah,
game, you know,
right.
like so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm choosing a Republic list to play against experimental droids right now, it's definitely Kenobi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything else just gets eaten, so.
Yep. All right. Well, we are the Notorious Scoundrels. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mike.
Stay fresh, cheese bags.